views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio. Get ready to rid yourself of all that is weighing you down and holding you back from living the life you envision. Coming Clean, The Art of Transparency with Catherine Moss is a hit show that brings a real and dynamic message to uncovering and believing in the true amazing being you already are. For the next hour, Catherine will help you become truthful, authentic, and mindful of living on purpose one day at a time. Now here's your host, Catherine Moss.
Welcome to Coming Clean Radio, The Art of Transparency. I'm your host, Catherine R.T. Moss, and I'm really interested, like I said every time, in this idea of living life in a very transparent way. And transparency for me means not hiding behind anything, allowing yourself to be seen for all that you are, and feeling pride in that, and not feeling ashamed of who you really are. So letting yourself be seen. This is what I've decided to do ever since I became sober over 3 years ago. And it's been really beneficial. However, it's not always easy, which I'm sure many of you know. So each week on Coming Clean, I invite a guest on the show to share their stories, their unique truth, and their authentic message in coming clean, whatever that is to them. The goal here, so, is to manifest true positive change in our lives and freeing ourselves from all that's weighing us down and no longer serving us. So I invite you to live on purpose one day at a time. So thanks a lot for listening in. I really do mean that. Thank you. If you like what you hear, please become a fan of Coming Clean Radio on Facebook and, of course, tell your friends. So you don't need to be in recovery to benefit what we discuss here. So this is open and can be applicable for everybody. Today, I'm super excited and honored to have Sarah Silverman on the show. Laura Silverman on the show. Wow, sorry. It's going great. Sorry. Laura Silverman on the show, the one and only. So if you believe that it's not possible to live an amazing, fulfilling, fun life sober, well, you obviously have not met Laura. So,
or Sarah.
I'm so sorry.
No, that's fine. I you know what? I get it all the time.
It must be like the S of the silver. So it came.
Well, it's nice that there's an actual famous Silverman, because this way people know how to spell my last name. They know. Yeah. And I get Sarah all the time.
That's probably why, because it's Sarah Silverman is a comedian.
Okay.
Okay. Maybe we should just cut this whole thing out.
Well, you can, but I like the fact that it's real and we're laughing about it and it's totally fine with me. So yes. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
I'm really excited to be here and I'm even more honored than you are. So, thank you so much.
We haven't met in person yet, but you have been a really big inspiration to me on my own journey of sobriety. So thank
really?
You.
Really? Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, totally.
Oh,
because I met you, I came across your website and I just was really, really attracted to, you know, your openness and your just like, your zest for life, really.
Mm. Thank you. Thank you so much.
So you are the founder of the Sobriety Collective.
Mm-hmm.
So, I was going to describe what that is, but how about you tell everybody what the Sobriety Collective is?
Sure. Okay. Well, hi, everyone.
Sarah,
you mean Laura again? Sorry, was that a joke?
Yeah, it was a joke.
Okay. Thank you. Yes. So, as Catherine said, I am the founder of the SobrietyCollective.com. And, you know, I've been thinking lately, I don't feel like rebranding, but it's really more of a recovery collective, because what I talk about is recovery from addiction or alcohol abuse, drug abuse. You don't have to be physically addicted to fall under the spectrum of wanting to get help for those issues. But I talk about that side of the house. And then I also talk a lot about mental health and recovering from mental illness. And I have co-occurring disorders, which used to be called dual diagnoses, where addiction and mental illness basically go hand in hand. One can cause the other, or correlation. I'm not a scientist or like a neuroscientist, but there's definitely a connection. So what I wanted to do in creating this space was have a place for creative people. And when I say creative, I mean writers, photographers, musicians, bloggers, entrepreneurs, chefs, really any sort of creative outlet that you have. And you're also in recovery from something that's causing, that used to cause pain. And now you found a way to move beyond that. And so, yeah, there is a bit of a niche there, because not everyone is going to be a musician, or not everyone's going to be a playwright or whatever. But I figured, since it's my website, I can do what I want. And the reason I did that is because I am very creative myself. I love to sing. I love to play guitar and piano. I'm into crafts. I like, I'm not an artist, but I do have a lot of tattoos. I love the tattoo art culture. And I've always just felt like creative. And so I figured, well, the genesis behind it is that a little over a year ago now, I just celebrated my 1 year anniversary of starting the website, a couple days ago. And, thank you. Thank you. So, and this kind of ties into my story, which I'm happy to just dive into. But I was coming up on 8 years last year of recovery.
Congratulations again.
Thank you. Thank you. And I was just starting to feel like kind of sort of this hole in my life. I have been in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous. It was, let's just say, not only recommended to me, but I was basically required to do it as part of the program that I was in to get sober. So I was in an intensive outpatient rehab program, and AA was required. So I went, and then I stayed for a little bit, and then I left, and then I came back a couple years later, this time wanting it. And I stayed for about a year and a half, and then I left because it just wasn't working for me anymore. And yeah, so the long and the short of it is that I've been in and out of a 12-step program. And what I found was a lot did resonate with me, a lot did work for me. And I carry a lot of those principles with me today, but a lot didn't work. And I felt very sort of isolated, because I was told that if I didn't do it a particular way, I was not considered someone who was in recovery. I wasn't considered sober. And I was scared to leave, because I just didn't really know like what people would think of me if I did things on my own. But I left because I wanted to stay true to myself, and I didn't feel like I belonged there anymore. And so that was basically the past 4 years. And so I, like I was saying, I was coming up on this anniversary, didn't have a lot of sober friends. I have a good chunk of really supportive, close friends, but none of whom have been through what I've been through. And so I had this almost urge or calling to connect with other people in recovery. And, I didn't know that there were so many websites and podcasts and just all this digital recovery for both addiction and mental illness that was on the internet. I just had no idea any of it existed, because I was kind of urged or told sternly to just not talk about recovery publicly. Mm-hmm. And that goes into the whole culture of anonymity, which I've learned is a lot different than what I used to think it was. So I was like, go ahead.
I was going to say, that's one of the things that I find so inspiring. And like when I was reading, I think on your website that you are not about you're not anonymous. Mm-hmm. Right. You say that it's when we keep addiction in the dark, that it's like it remains a taboo and nobody can connect about that. Like, you know, mm-hmm. create communities. Like, that is so powerful. I mean, do you think that's a bit controversial? I mean, it seems like a lot of people are doing that these days, too.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah, actually, it's the conversation about anonymity is always going to be sort of at the forefront of discussion, because what I found is, yeah, there are a lot of advocates who are talking publicly and sharing their stories. And I think in terms of anonymity as it applies to Alcoholics Anonymous, the main goal with that was so that no one spoke on behalf of the program, just in case anyone relapsed. They didn't want AA to be the blame, because, I mean, everyone has their own personal story. So if you speak on behalf of a program and you fail, let's say, that program doesn't want to be held accountable. That's one reason that anonymity, the principle of anonymity, existed. But another reason was that just so that you're not blabbing about everyone you see at meetings to other people and sharing their stories without their permission. Mm-hmm. What I think is outdated is that that sort of part of anonymity has sort of carried over into people being afraid to share their stories for fear of ostracization. Is that the word?
Yeah.
Did I just make that up?
Ostracization. Being ostracized.
How right. You say that? But isn't that an actual word? Ostracized?
Yeah.
So yeah, for fear of being ostracized, because of that stigma associated with the disease. I mean, and we're not even going to get into the whole disease model, but regardless, yeah, so a lot of people are talking about their recovery now. They're not necessarily speaking on behalf of a program if they get sober with AA, or they get sober with NA, or they get sober with Smart Recovery or LifeRing or whatever, but they're just talking about their recovery. So yeah, a lot of people are talking about it now, and good, because, you know, I wish at some point, when I was in the process of building time and just, you know, sort of starting a new life, was I just wish that more people had talked about it. And I felt just very like, I honestly thought I was the only 20 something at the time who was going through what I was going through, because everybody around me was still drinking, and maybe not to excess, but happy hours and parties and dates. You can't go on a date without going for drinks. And so it was just everywhere. I felt definitely like I was the only one who was going through what I was going through.
So you were 24, right?
Yes. Yes.
And
just turned 24. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What was that like? Like, you did a complete like 180, right?
Yeah.
And it's really hard when you're that young. It's like you said, yeah, like how, like your social calendar for most people, mm-hmm, revolves around alcohol.
Yeah. Unfortunately. I mean, you know, alcohol is a legal drug, but it's still a drug, and it shouldn't be considered normal to ingest it or ingest so much of it. But we're in a culture that glorifies drinking. Yeah, I mean, I had just turned 24, and I had been hospitalized for the second time in 2 years, which probably should have been a sign that the first time should have been a sign that maybe something's not right. But so, yeah, my point was that it is totally a sign of strength to ask for help. It's not a sign of weakness. And even though I didn't know necessarily what I was hoping to achieve when I asked for help, I didn't think in terms of forever, like I was going to quit drinking forever, because that sounded really scary. Mm. But I knew that I couldn't continue down the path that I was going. I mean, countless times I had just, you know, and I'm very ADD, so my mind is all over the place. But I was just thinking, a couple months ago, I was a volunteer at an event in D.C. called Cupid's Undie Run. It's for charity. And everyone basically strips down to their underwear and runs a mile in the cold. Yeah. But of course, they all drink a ton before to sort of warm up and get friendly with each other. And it's just, mm-hmm, yeah. So,
and after you did that, and did you as well? Did you do this?
So, a couple years ago, I did it sober. I might have been the only sober one. Yeah. And it was really cold. Felt
good
very,
for
very
you.
Cold. Yeah. But I did it as a volunteer this year. So, I was able to dress very warmly while everyone was in skimpy clothes. The reason I bring it up is because after the event, I was at a coffee shop with one of the fellow volunteers, and we saw this girl. I knew she was involved with the run because she had this like pink tutu on and bright colored like clothing that I knew was, I mean, I'd seen all these runners. So, and she was crying hysterically and yelling and being belligerent to people and just like making no sense at all. You could tell it was all drunk babble. And it was so embarrassing and just like mortifying to see that. And I was exactly the same way on so many different occasions. I just can't even count. And to see her, it was like this completely visceral reminder of what my life used to be like. And I didn't drink every day and I didn't drink all day, but usually when I did drink, bad things would happen. Yeah. Maybe not every night, but, very frequently I would
relate to that, you know, cause it is hard. I've talked to other people and then they say, oh, well, you were a binge drinker. How did you even convince yourself you had a problem? Because, you know, you can go. Like, look at me, I'm totally normal. I'm going out and I'm behaving myself and I can go for long periods of time. But then it's like you said, it's like, you don't know when it's going to happen, but there's something's going to happen and it's.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, I remember that I probably only really drank like once a week, maybe twice a week. So, you know, how could I possibly be an alcoholic or how could I have a problem? I mean, I'm not drinking morning to night and it's not like I need it to. I didn't have any physical symptoms of dependency, but I had a lot of psychological dependency. I needed it to feel confident. I needed it to feel okay in my skin. And one of the reasons why I found it so helpful for me was because it helps quiet my mind and not make me feel so anxious all the time. And it sort of. Yeah, it's numbing.
I think that so many people can relate to that. You know, they feel really like some people feel socially anxious, you know, and then they find something that allows them to be themselves, but better, you know, and then that's their new, like, you know, I guess we're self-medicating, like you said.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So you tried to quit a few times. And then when you started again, and it kind of picked up where it left off, you said.
Yeah. Yeah. There had been some, like I said before, I had some pretty close calls that were scary for me. And of course I had a lot of never again, like I'm never doing that again. And I know a lot of people can relate to that because even after just a bad hangover, people are like, I'm never drinking that much again. Mm-hmm. But, I had tried a couple of times to stop maybe for a month or 2 months or a couple of weeks or just not this weekend or something. But because I didn't have any sort of structured help or any plans really, and no real support system in terms of me being public with what I was doing, I found that pretty soon after I would just kind of go back to my old behaviors. Mm-hmm. And yeah. And then it got worse. Mm-hmm.
So you had an experience on July 13th, was it?
Yeah, of 2016.
So that really changed everything, didn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
What happened?
What happens?
I mean, you can say as much as you'd like, or, you know, what led you to really, because it was a total behavioral change and a total change. How did that come about?
Well, that's a really good question, because by all accounts, it could have just been another awful, awful, awful night. And maybe I would have just stopped for a little bit and then gone back to my old behaviors, which is what my track record was before. But something's like clicked inside of me and I don't know how to describe it. A lot of people call it like a spiritual experience. I mean, I didn't feel any sort of white lights shining down on me. No voices were talking to me, but, I had been hospitalized, in the middle of New York City. I'd never been there before. And, the long and the short of it was that I was drinking all day, didn't have much to eat, and I ended up browning out and then blacking out and then passing out, and I was hospitalized. And I woke up / came to and was completely just terrified. I didn't know where I was. I didn't have any of my things with me. I'd been separated from my purse, my sort of quote unquote friends, my shoes. I mean, I had no shoes with me, and I mean, no phone, because everything was in my purse. And I came to find out that somehow someone had turned my purse into a security guard at I was at Madison Square Garden at the time, which is a huge venue in New York City. And everything was intact. And I've been told rather chillingly that the security guard who was on duty had access to my phone. There was a little bit of battery left, and he called a couple of recent numbers, one of which was my mom and another which was my cousin, who was in New York. And they tried to track me down and couldn't. And yeah, that was just a really terrifying thing to hear, because this time I had affected people that I loved and cared about. And I wasn't just hurting myself, I was hurting other people. And so that, coupled with just something else, like my cousin that night, she was like, look, we're going out. I don't want to leave you here in my apartment, because I had reunited with her. She was like, you can drink if you want, I won't tell your parents. And I was like, I don't ever want to drink again. And I meant it somehow. I actually meant it. I had said so many times before, I was like, I'm never drinking again, but I never meant it. Or at least I never followed through with it. But this time something like just completely shifted. And when I got home with the bus ticket that was still in my purse, I got a few days off of work, and I got help immediately. I needed help.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I read, like, there was a period of time where I read a lot of, like, these, like, memoirs of addiction and everything. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of people gloss over that period when, you know, they have, like, some type of realization, and then they, you know, start to improve their lives. But not a lot of people talk about what it's really like in the beginning to make that in profound change in your life. So what was it like for you?
It was hard. It was really hard because, well, I was 24 for starters, too young to go through something like this. At least that's what I thought. And I also didn't really think of it in terms of, I didn't think of it in terms of forever. I mean, it has been like forever so far. But it felt too overwhelming to think of what I was going to do for the rest of my life. So I tried to like break it up into little chunks. I was in this intensive outpatient rehab, where I would go for, 2 hours, 3 times a week for 5 weeks. And then we also went to 15 AA meetings, and we had to get our little papers signed. Mm-hmm. And every beginning of every session, we had to be breathalyzed, and we also had to share our sobriety dates. And a lot of times the people who I was in quote unquote class with, my fellow cohort, their dates kept changing, but somehow mine, well, not somehow. I mean, I know what I was actively not trying to drink, but mine stayed the same. And, I started to feel this sort of glimmering, small, teeny, teeny, tiny sense of pride that I was like building up a little bit of clean time, not having to rely on alcohol to be in my skin. But it was still really hard. And some of my, who I thought were friends at the time, just didn't get it. They're like, what are you doing or not doing? And why aren't you coming out with us to go drinking and day drinking and all, you know? And I had to cut some people out of my life. And that was the best decision for me at the time, because I just couldn't be around toxic influences. And maybe, I mean, I know I did a lot of things that I shouldn't have when I was drinking. And as part of someone who did eventually go through all 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I did make amends to some people that I felt I needed to. But I still had a lot of people that I needed to be away from. And I didn't go to a bar. First of all, there was no real reason to, but I didn't go to a bar for like the first 6 months because I just couldn't be around alcohol. And of course, like dating, I mean, gosh, like everyone wants to go for drinks, and it's just, they don't even think of it so much in alcoholically. They're not like, let's go get wasted on our first date. It's just,
oh, of course.
Yeah. It's a de facto thing. Like you want to go for a drink sometime, and it's become so normalized that like mm-hmm. drinking is just part of like that socialization. And yeah, it was hard. I kind of hermited out for a little bit.
I did the same.
Yeah. Well, how old were you when you got sober?
30.
30. Okay.
I had, you know, I wasn't done yet. I had to keep going.
Yeah. Well, I might have not fully been done yet, but yeah, I had to just, yeah. So I think we're actually about the same age. I'm turning 33 next month.
Yeah. I'm 34.
Yeah. 34. Okay.
So also you said that there's more to sobriety than 12 steps. Mm-hmm. Right. So what kinds, can you talk more about that? Like what do you bring into your, you know, your recovery program that's important to you?
Okay. So kind of like, what is my program and what are other options available for people?
Yeah. What has been your experience?
Well, like I said, I have been in AA and it's been helpful to me in a lot of different points in my life. But there's something like, the statistic is something like 23 million Americans are in recovery. There's also a staggering amount who are in need of help. And I don't know what, because AA is funny that, I mean, there's not a lot of like surveys done or whatever, but there are like a few million people who I think are, I don't know. There are millions of people who are in AA, but it's not representative of all the people. And I'm just talking about Americans, not even like people in the rest of the world mm-hmm. who are in recovery. So AA represents a good chunk, but it is not everyone who is in recovery. So there are programs like Smart Recovery and Life Ring and Women for Sobriety and things that aren't actually programs, like specific programs, but people who like to go out and exercise and be in nature and meditate. And you're big into yoga and lots of yoga. I'm actually starting to get into it more myself, which is just a really wonderful feeling. Oh, so, great. I mean, my point is that there's tons of ways to get and stay sober. And for me, the things that are most important to me are, really good relationships with my family, specifically my parents, having a couple of close confidants, close friends that I have, that just are completely unconditional with their love for me and vice versa. I have a therapist who I see about once a month now, and that's really important for me to have an impartial third party who I can just use as a sounding board and who's also a licensed professional in case I actually need more than just someone to talk to. Mm-hmm. I exercise frequently, although not as frequently as I should be. And I'm also trying to get a better hold on my nutrition. I'm not even that overweight, but I'm at my heaviest weight for me, and I don't feel so good about myself. So I need to kind of tackle that. Exercise, therapy. I love going out for a walk outside if the weather's nice. Just being out in nature, it helps me put things into perspective. It makes me feel small, but not in an insignificant mm-hmm. way. Just mm-hmm. sort of like as a part of something bigger. Music is just really important for me and is kind of part of my recovery. And I read a lot of recovery memoirs. And I, of course, doing this thing with the Sobriety Collective, I talk to people all over the world who are in recovery from all sorts of different things. So
what's your favorite memoir?
Oh, wow. I have a lot, but can I do kind of a top three?
Sure.
Okay. So my absolute favorite one, and this is the one that really helped me start my journey, is called Smashed: Story of a Drunken Girlhood. The author is Corin Zailkus. I don't know quite how to pronounce it, but she is fantastic. And we're Facebook friends now, so it's like really fun to be Facebook friends with the woman who like wrote the book that kind of helped save me.
Is that based, because I've seen Smashed the movie. Was that movie based on this book?
I don't even know I didn't even know there was a Smashed movie.
Oh, it's really good.
And can I'm you send me a link to that afterward?
Yeah, of course. And okay. I'm sure that the book is a million times better, as it always is.
Was it a TV movie or like an actual?
No, it was an actual movie. And that guy who played Jesse on
Oh, Breaking Bad.
He's in it, and I like him.
Oh, well, I like him too.
I can't remember the woman's who plays the main character. I can't remember her
name. So I'm looking online right now. Her name is Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who plays Kate. But no, this is not the same storyline, although it does look good. Okay. And you know what another good movie is? It's kind of cheesy, but I love it. 28 Days with Sandra Bullock.
Mm, I've never seen that.
So good. Okay. But okay, so yeah, that's a different smashed, but it still looks good. I love movies and books about addiction and recovery. Another fantastic book is Dry by Augustine Burroughs.
Oh yeah, I like that one too.
And then I'm gonna actually do five. So my third one is Unwasted, My Lush Sobriety by Sasha Zimmerman Skoblik. I think she's just Sasha Zimmerman now. Yeah. Very good book.
That's a good one.
I really loved Guts by Kristen Johnston. That was a fantastic book. And Blackout by Sarah Heppala.
Yeah.
So good. I'm reading more right now. I'm actually I'm in the middle of Mishka Shubali. I have no idea. What's his name, but it's called I Swear I'll Make It Up to You.
And that one's good?
So good. Okay. He's just a phenomenal writer. Yeah, there's just so many books, and I wish I could clone myself because I don't know how to read fast enough. But yeah, there's just, and of course, like for anyone who is thinking about this, Drinking a Love Story by Caroline Knapp is
fantastic. Yeah, that was the one for me. I read that, I was like, okay, something's up.
But when you first saw the book, you were probably like, ooh, someone else likes
I might have been drinking it while I was reading it.
Right.
I'm like,
drinking
ooh.
While you're writing. Yeah, someone else loves drinking. Ooh,
this will be good. I'm like, yeah. And then I'm like, maybe I should put this down.
Lit by Mary Carr is also a good book, too.
Yeah, and she does, like, she has a lot. Lit, and then, wasn't it, like, Cherry, like, something? Cherry is another one, but I don't think that's about any...
Oh.
That's not about like addiction or anything.
I have so many books just at my nightstand right now that I need to read that are recovery memoirs. Of course, I love reading other stuff too. I like reading just novels, but in terms of like my nonfiction, I'm not really a historical fiction kind of gal. I love just getting into some good memoirs. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
So also I wanted to, ask you if you could share your contact information for everybody listening. How can everyone find you
on the
World Wide Web?
Of course. First of all, go to www.thesobrietycollective.com, and that's just the landing page, but click join the movement. You're not actually going to join anything, but it's just sort of the way you get in the website. And then, social media, follow me, Twitter and Instagram, We Are Sober, @ We Are Sober, facebook.com/sobrietycollective. And you can email me, like, just if you want to just email me, you can either use the contact me form on my website or email me at laura@thesobrietycollective.com. That's Laura, LAURA.
Okay.
Yeah.
And are you on, you're on Twitter as well, right?
Yes. Twitter and Instagram have the same, handle @ We Are Sober.
Perfect. So I'm Catherine Artimas, and you're listening to Coming Clean Radio, The Art of Transparency. We're going to take a quick break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Do you want to achieve your goals? Do you want to strengthen relationships with others? Do you want to improve your financial status? Colette Marie Steffen is partnering with Mark Kettenbach to bring you an energetic upgrade online experience launching in April. Unfold and develop your full potential. Visit energeticupgrade.com today for more information. That's energeticupgrade.com.
Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
Get ready to rid yourself of all that is weighing you down and holding you back. Coming Clean, The Art of Transparency with Catherine Moss is a hit show that brings a real and dynamic message to uncovering and believing in the true amazing being you already are. Tune in and let Catherine help you become truthful, authentic, and mindful of living on purpose one day at a time. Live each Tuesday, 9 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Shine On Radio, Find Your Shine with Kelly, is the show that celebrates what makes you, you. Join co-hosts Kelly Wadler and Dr. Pat Basile as they break down how to brilliantly fuel and move your body and love what makes you shine. Kelly is a professional arts and wellness coach dedicated to helping brilliant women find their confidence, energy, self-love, and shine. Tune in to Shine On Radio with Kelly and find your shine on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Song of the Heart, Walking the Path of Light, from author and healer Francine Vale, is available now. Through Francine's life story, we learn how imperative it is to love one another. Once this simple truth is learned, peace on earth will prevail. Song of the Heart is a life lived and a story told for this purpose. To learn more about Francine and her amazing gifts, or to order your copy of the book today, visit angelsandlightbeings.com.
The doctor is in. Tune in to the hit show, The Psychic Love Doctor, with host Deborah Lee. Deborah's life-affirming, highly perceptive reading method has taught Deborah how to zero in on specific problems with relationships, career pursuits, and current roadblocks to success and happiness. Join Deborah Fridays at 2 p.m. Pacific, and for a special broadcast the second Thursday of every month at 11 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
And we're back on Coming Clean with myself, Catherine Arati-Moss. I have Laura Silverman here telling her story of recovery and also the insight that she has and writes about at the Sobriety Collective. Also, yeah, no problem. You are going to be giving away a free gift.
Yes, as it turns out, I am. maybe at some point I can take a photo and send it to you so that you can post it on your show page. But I have a mug with your name on it. It is it's a white mug with my logo on it, the Sobriety Collective, and it's great for coffee or herbal tea or just water, because water is awesome. So yeah, I'll be giving away one mug to a lucky winner. I don't know how you do your drawings, but yeah.
We can say the first person to send it over an email.
Sure. And then just in terms of logistics, I guess I can work with that person in terms of sending them their gift.
So don't delay the sweet mug. What does it say on it?
It says the Sobriety Collective. It's the black and white logo. I'll have to send you one as well. But
yeah, it's a. Did you design this logo yourself?
Okay. No, I wish. I'm not a graphic designer, but there is an absolutely, absolutely fantastic graphic designer in recovery who is a dear friend of mine. His name is Chris, and he is the founder of the recoveryrevolution.online. And have you been there?
It's called the Recovery Revolution.
Yes. And the website URL is therecoveryrevolution.online. So that's his own website. Yeah, and he's a graphic designer amongst other talents, and he designed my logo.
And you have a lot of different merchandise on your website, and it's just so cool, you know. So if anyone is looking for any like really cool, you know, sobriety, like you have t-shirts and everything, that go there.
Yeah, well, I would love to give a t-shirt away too, but it's just hard not knowing someone's size ahead of time.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's, and the thing that I love about the shirts is that at least for some of the designs, they're charity designs. So I've teamed up with other artists. This is the whole creative side of things. I'm teamed up with artists in recovery who have sort of done their own take on the logo. And then whatever profits from that design, so whoever buys a shirt of that particular design, the net profit will go to a charity of their choosing.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So I've had, I worked with the team at rocketdesigns.net. They're a couple who are in recovery, and they did a design, they did a design for me, and the profit went to the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Mm-hmm. And then another design is from Aaron Perry of SoberSoldier.com, and that's Sober, S-O-B-R. And his design, the profits will go toward the Amy Winehouse Foundation. Uh-huh. So I'm trying to loop in some charity. This is not a way, I mean, I don't make much money off of this, let me tell you. It is not for, for money, but it is for giving back and also looking cool. So I, my thing is like, look hot, do good. That's sort of the, that's sort of the motto.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's we'll awesome. Have to send you some stuff. Although I don't know how to ship to Switzerland, but we'll figure it out.
Well, I'll be in the United States this summer, I think. So maybe.
Okay. Well, maybe. If you have some sort of PO box or some way for me to send you something this summer, I definitely will.
I'd love that. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
So getting back to the conversation, you mentioned a little bit about the connection between mental illness and substance abuse. And this is something that's very new for me, but could you talk a little bit about that? So this is, you know, like, it's really common, you say.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot more common than people think. So mental illness has a wide spectrum, just like addiction does. Because, for instance, I mean, when people, at least when I used to think of what an alcoholic was, I thought of someone who was living under a bridge, drinking out of a bottle that was in a paper bag and, you know, wearing just a trench coat and nothing underneath. I mean, that kind of thing, like just completely gone. But alcoholics or people who have substance use disorder are everywhere, and they're all of us. And there's no discrimination against race, socioeconomic background, age. It can happen to anyone. And like that, mental illness. People have bipolar disorder and PTSD and obsessive compulsive disorder, anxiety, depression, body dysmorphia, all sorts of things. And it's not necessarily that, it's not the stereotype of what used to be called quote unquote crazy. Schizophrenia and schizoaffective disorder are up there too, but regular normal people have brains, and when you have a brain, you can have brain chemical imbalances, and sometimes they're just minor and sometimes they're a lot bigger. And I really don't know a ton of research about this, but I've been doing more. Usually when someone has some sort of mental illness, it makes them more susceptible to addictive behaviors. So there are, SAMHSA put out a study, that's the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, part of the Department of Health and Human Services in the United States. And they put out a study in the past year or year and a half, where it said something like 4 or 5 million Americans at least have been surveyed as having co-occurring disorders, which are both mental illness and addiction. So it's a lot more common than people think. And with me, I had my earliest recollection of being aware that something felt different in terms of my obsessive compulsive disorder. And for me, that means a lot of just weird thoughts, obsessive thoughts. Compulsions for me are checking, rechecking, staring at things that I know I've turned off, or mm-hmm. just totally irrational. I'm aware that it's irrational. And that's one of the key things about having OCD is that you're aware that your behaviors are just completely irrational, but you have trouble, like real trouble stopping, because there's just a switch that's on in your brain that for whatever reason, it's like a trip switch, and it can't like turn off. It just keeps repeating and repeating and repeating. So I think I was like 6 or 7 when I first remembered that something felt weird and funny. And I've always sort of been a socially anxious person. It got really bad, actually. I got clinical depression when I was 17. And they say, they being these same sort of governmental bodies that do these surveys, SAMHSA and a couple of others. I learned yesterday, because I went to this big recovery event in DC, that teenage and college years are usually when mental illness manifests itself. And so I was 17, and my brother and my close friends went off to college, and I was a senior in an international school. I lived abroad most of my life. And so I was at this really tiny high school where I knew who everyone was, but at the same time, like, I didn't have any friends anymore. They had all left. And I was supposed to be having the time of my life as a senior, and I avoided practically every social situation that was presented to me. I skipped assemblies. I skipped classes. I skipped field trips because I was afraid of having a panic attack. And then I would have panic attacks about having panic attacks. Mm-hmm. And it was just a very awful, vicious cycle I never got suicidal, or I never had suicidal thoughts, but I somehow didn't imagine myself graduating, because it was just too much to, like, I thought I would be able to get a diploma, but not have to like walk and, mm-hmm. Because it was just too much. Like, the thought of that, being on stage in front of hundreds and hundreds of people, like, I just had so many different panic attacks over that. So somehow I did graduate and did not die on stage. And I went to college, and I was able to reinvent myself. And I still had my mental stuff going on, but that's also when I was introduced to alcohol. And I liked it. I liked how it made me feel. I liked how it quieted my mind. And that's sort of the start of that. Mm-hmm.
And how did it change once you came off of it? How did, was there like a huge effect on you after, you know, coming off this addiction on the OCD?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, actually, because I finally removed the substance, and now I had to actually deal with the underlying issues that were causing me to go overboard. Mm-hmm. It was rough, very rough, but I started seeing mental health professionals, and I got prescribed an antidepressant for my anxiety, which was huge, because I used to have panic attacks almost every day. And now I have them maybe like a few times a year. They still happen. I mean, an antidepressant is not going to get rid of them. And even with therapy and with changing your life, it's just going to help minimize them. But, I've never taken an actual anti-anxiety medication like Xanax, because those are highly addictive, or at least they can be. And I never wanted to sort of put myself in that position where I would get addicted to something else. But I wish I could have taken Xanax for some of my panic attacks. It was really rough, because now I was not drinking to feel better, and I had all these issues that I still had to deal with. And I mean, it got easier over time, getting used to the antidepressant, getting used to talking about my stuff, my feelings, my thoughts, realizing that I wasn't actually crazy, that I just had some brain chemical imbalances that caused certain behaviors or certain ways of thinking. And I'll tell you, I still struggle sometimes with the OCD. I actually had a very short-lived panic attack the other day. I was driving, and that's scary when you have like this wave of panic that flows through your body as you're driving, because you're like, you know, you you could put yourself in danger or someone else in danger. And the way that I deal with them now is so much different than before. I used to think I was actually dying or something was happening, but now I realize I can pull over if I need to. It's not the end of the world. It is just a panic attack. I can breathe through it. It's going to be over almost as soon as it starts. So I have ways of handling it that I've worked on with my therapist. And, yeah, I mean, I still struggle sometimes because I'm still human and I'm still a person. And, it's just, I have new tools and new tactics that I didn't have before to deal with.
Because a lot of people think, and I also, I thought that is as long as when I finally figured out that alcohol was not helping me, it was actually doing me wrong. Like, you know, wasn't helping at all. It was had negative side effects in my life. I thought that everything was like, okay, well, let's just kick the drinking and then my life will, you know, get so much better. But that's not the case.
Right.
Things
I know.
Just are able, you're then able to see. And then you give yourself the chance to be consciously present and aware in those moments, whether they're good or bad.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's you just totally hit the nail on the head. That is what recovery is all about. It's not all good. It's like you're not numbing yourself with any substances. You're actually able to participate in your own life and hopefully be present. I mean, I try to be present as much as possible, but because I've got some of these issues going on, sometimes I'm just stuck in my head. But I can recognize when things like that happen, and I don't have to rely on a substance as a crutch. But yeah, I mean, just because I quit drinking does not mean that my life got instantly better. I mean, in some ways it did, obviously. And in other ways, it was like, okay, now I'm at square one. Now I have to actually deal with this stuff.
Yeah. I mean, we have to ask ourselves, I mean, why is it so hard to be like just there? You know, why is it so hard to like be present? I mean, we all look for ways, even, you know, even though, for example, I'm, you know, sober, I still find myself looking for ways, like food is an issue for me too, of like, how can I like escape feeling this way? Or how do I not feel this? You know, it's so hard for so many of us.
Yeah. Yeah.
But sobriety for you has become a source of pride, hasn't it?
Yes, it is. And absolutely. I mean, it's part of my life now. You know, it's kind of funny and sort of on topic, but sort of off topic. And maybe TMI for some people, but I was having a lot of digestive issues recently and looking for ways to add more probiotics into my diet. I started taking a probiotic supplement. But I also, and trust me, I've done my research on this and I wasn't sure if this was the right thing or not, but I tried kombucha for the first time. Mm-hmm. And I know that that does have trace alcohol amounts in it. And I've been very, very vigilant about not ingesting any sort of alcohol unless it's been cooked off or like baked in something. Because, I mean, I love vanilla, but I won't just put raw vanilla extract on anything anymore because it's got a high alcohol content. And, you know, if I use mouthwash, which I don't as much as I should, but I buy the alcohol-free stuff. So I'm very conscious of what I'm putting in my body, but I was having a lot of like digestive issues and I tried kombucha and I felt like very mixed feelings about it because I was like, I'm actually ingesting some alcohol. It's so trace that it almost is negligible. This was a brand that markets two different types of kombucha. One is for the over 21 crowd, which has a stronger alcohol content, and one is for the under 21 crowd, which is so minimal that the FDA can label it as a non-alcoholic beverage. But it still has like some trace amounts in it because it's a fermented food.
Yeah.
So I felt like really sort of like, am I being hypocritical? Am I saying that I'm sober? But I'm, first of all, it did not count as a relapse and it did not cause me to relapse. But the fact that I'm so like overly vigilant about my sobriety, where I think that even something that like kombucha. I mean, I'm not being articulate or even knowing what I'm saying, but I definitely thought a lot about like whether I was making a conscious decision, like, should I do it? Should I not do it? I mean, is it going to affect my sobriety? But the fact is, like, I needed to try something. And as it turns out, it actually made me feel worse. So I won't be going back to that. Mm.
But you know what? I think that's, you are taking it, you're taking it seriously. You know, you're taking your sobriety seriously. And even little things like that can make a difference.
Yeah. I mean, if I was like, ooh, I can feel some of this alcohol, I'm going to drink kombucha every day, but still call myself sober, that would be a different, totally different thing. I was doing something where I needed to see what was going on with my body and try something, and it didn't work. And it also made me feel a little bit weird about it, but it's not like I suddenly erased almost 9 years by drinking one kombucha.
Wow.
You know, like,
nine years. I mean, just to, like, coming to the end of the show, what advice would you give people who are maybe in the beginning? I mean, you already have 9 years under your belt.
Yeah. So, and that's a good question, Catherine. Well, 9 years happens when you treat it like it's one day at a time. I mean, it's true. Like, first of all, I don't think of everything in terms of one day at a time, although I do have it literally tattooed on my back. But in terms, at least in terms of my mental health, I have to think of things in terms of today, because I can't, I do something called catastrophizing. And I think of all the worst possible scenarios of something that could happen in the future. And of course, I don't know what's going to happen. So I need to just not do that. So be present. Know that if we're lucky, I mean, it's no guarantee, but know that tomorrow will come. And just have a support system. Even if that means just one person right now. And I'm not going to tell you to find a higher power, but find something that works for you, whether it's AA, whether it's smart recovery, whether it's finding a therapist, whether it's reading a lot of recovery memoirs, getting into yoga, running races, doing CrossFit, anything that makes you feel better and doesn't make you rely on a substance to get through your day. I think that would be my biggest advice. Just know that if you do that day by day, you'll slowly build time, and things do get better. They're not always easy, but they'll get better. So I guess that would be my advice.
That's great advice. But thank you. Thank you for sharing your personal story on here.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thank you for being, I don't know. I want to say, like, trailblazer, you know, like, you're just so, you're courageous, you're inspiring. And I think that you're really going to help a lot of people. And thank you for, you know, joining me here and opening up like that.
It's been such an honor. Thank you for having me. And yeah, I do this because there are other people, and you're one of them. So we could just thank each other all day long. Someone's going to have to hang up the phone at some point. Yeah. So anyway, thank you. Yeah. And if the first person to email me, not just with a hello, but with some, maybe your favorite part of the episode,
yes,
we'll get a mug.
Yeah. So what is your email again? I can add it in.
Yeah. Yeah. Add it in. But it is Laura, L-A-U-R-A, @thesobrietycollective.com.
Okay, so you, the first person to email their favorite part of this episode will win the sweet mug.
Yes, sure.
And how can people contact you again?
Twitter, Instagram, @WeAreSober. Just go on the website, because there's all the social media links there.
Okay, that's easy. Okay. Well, so please join me here at Coming Clean Radio every Tuesday at 12 Eastern, 11 Central, and 9 Pacific Time. Next week on Coming Clean, I'll have Rebecca Watson, and she is the author of the book, and a good friend of mine, the author of the book Change is Easy and Other Novel Concepts. So have a great week, and I'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to Coming Clean, The Art of Transparency with Catherine Moss. Catherine can help you rid yourself of that which is weighing you down and holding you back from living the life you envision. Let's become truthful, authentic, and mindful of living on purpose one day at a time. Tune in each Tuesday, 9 a.m. Pacific on transformationtalkradio.com or visit the archives at withintheflow.com.